Hello and welcome to D2C Podcast. Today we're excited to feature Taylor Fraser, a vital force behind the innovative sock brand Outway. A Victoria local and seasoned e-commerce expert, Taylor brings a wealth of experience and a unique perspective on brand growth and strategy. In this episode, Taylor shares his biggest learning from 2023, the power of simplification and returning to fundamentals in business. Diving deep into the post-pandemic landscape, Taylor discusses how Outway navigated the challenges of rapid growth, the importance of cutting back on complexity, and the strategic decision to focus on what truly drives sales. He reveals the pivotal role of scrutinizing every aspect of the business, from marketing channels to product lines, and how this rigorous approach led to more effective operations and increased profitability. Moreover, Taylor sheds light on a critical hiring decision, providing insights into the importance of aligning team members with the brand's core values and vision. He also touches on the importance of data-driven decision-making, the simplification of email marketing strategies, and the exciting journey into Amazon as a new channel for growth for Outway in 2024. Join us for this enlightening conversation with Taylor Fraser from Outway, where you'll gain invaluable insights into the art of simplifying your business strategy while scaling effectively in the dynamic world of direct-to-consumer e-commerce. That's DTC, never D2C. Got it? Good. And on with the show.
At one point, we were experimenting with Reddit ads, and it was like, why are we doing this? You know, we were doing TikTok, and we didn't have the bandwidth for it. We had a mobile app, an affiliate program that, although it was fantastic, it just wasn't lifting the overall sales of the store. And so we just like cut down to, we're going to run email, we're going to run SMS to complement the email, we're going to run heavy into Meta, and then we're going to use Google to sort of complement Facebook. We just really, really simplified. So getting rid of SKUs and products that just weren't really driving good enough revenue. Every product that's on a shelf, it's effectively costing us money. You know, there's cash tied up in this product. What are new customers buying? What are return customers buying? What is actually driving the needle here?
If you haven't yet used Motion, the creative analytics platform used by top e-com and D2C brands like Fiori, True Classic, The Farmer's Dog, Hexclad, and hundreds more to ship winning ads, here's why you should try it out. Everyone knows that the right creative is the number one lever for success with paid ads. That's how you make money. But consistently shipping new winning creative? You're gonna need your media buyers and your creative teams on the same page. Right now, you're probably spending hours tiring away going back and forth between Google Sheets and your ad platforms and tools, and then spending even more time plugging it all into different decks for the rest of your team. In a perfect world, you could have an elegant way to combine visual assets and performance data so media buyers can save time and creative teams can get the details they need to make great ads all in one place. And that's where Motion comes in. In seconds, you can build powerful visual reports using data from your ad accounts. You can monitor your performance metrics and see your visual assets in the same platform. No need to go back and forth across multiple apps. You'll finally have media buyers and creative teams working together to create and scale your next big winner. If you're ready to learn how the best D2C and e-commerce brands use Motion to ship winning Meta, TikTok, and YouTube ads, book a demo today or start a free trial at motionapp.com/DTC. Even better, Motion offers a monthly subscription plan so you can dodge those annoying annual contracts. Get 50% off your first month when you use the link motionapp.com/DTC on signup. Taylor, welcome to the D2C podcast. Long time coming, Victoria local here. You're working with Rob Fraser, friend of the podcast, on Outway Socks. Super glad to have you here. I wanted to just start by asking you what your biggest learning from 2023 was with Outway.
Don't overcomplicate things and simplify. Get back to fundamentals. I think 2023 was this year where it was sort of off the back of the pandemic where, as much as I don't like to talk about the pandemic, it's kind of accelerated so much growth for so many brands. And I think through that acceleration, all these brands, they added so many layers to their business. They hired more people, which ended up being more complex for their brand. And I think once things started to teeter off and plateau, I think the reality sort of set in that, oh, this isn't going to be happening every year, these crazy, crazy numbers. And so I think it sort of had a lot of brands looking in the mirror being like, what actually drives sales? What is actually meaningful for the, you know, moving the brand along? So I think for us, it was this realization of like, we went through a rebrand during 2022. We sort of got off on a weird foot and we kind of lost our way a little bit. And then in 2023, it was like right around Q2, it was kind of like, whoa, we've almost like lost our own brand and we've lost our identity, it sort of felt like. And so we just had to stop and completely simplify everything, like whether it was internal systems, whether it was like redundant hires, just thing like products that we're selling, lowering the SKU count. Like there were just so many exercises we went through, and we just asked ourselves, like, is this actually driving meaningful traffic and sales? And is this getting us to our goals? And most of the time it was like, no, it's not. And so we would just viciously and relentlessly cut things that weren't really serving us. And so through doing that, you kind of realize that you can actually hit your goals just doing the basics. And now we're at a spot where the team is smaller than it's been in many years, but we're doing more than we ever have before, which is amazing. So
super cool. It's like, yeah, it's like that pandemic boost could mask so many different things and could obfuscate the fact that like a lot, like you're like, oh wow, all these efforts that I'm doing are working. Yeah. All these, this new hire, these new process, these new products, it's all working. But when the tide kind of came out and the pandemic boost faded, you have to take a really close, you know, to scrutinize things a lot more carefully to keep winning.
Yeah, it was like during the pandemic, everyone was hitting W's, and so it was really hard to suss out who was full of shit or who wasn't doing a good job, because even the worst strategies were somewhat getting like a win. And, you know, like you said, once everything settled, then it kind of exposed all of these things that weren't working. And then all those people that were taking big W's were now taking L's, and it was like, okay, now the real work begins. Like, are you going to continue this? Or did you learn anything from that? So we kind of went through this like reskin almost during 2023. And so the back half of the year was highly successful for us doing that.
Very cool. Can you give me some specifics about things that you like? What were the two or three, or the, even just the one most impactful changes that you made after you had that wake up call that allowed you to be more profitable, more effective?
I think it would probably, it's not like one thing. I think it would be cutting a lot of unnecessary like fat from the business. Like one would be going through all of our platforms, like every single thing that we use, like any channels that we were marketing in that weren't driving, you know, meaningful new customers. You know, at one point we were experimenting with Reddit ads, and it was like, why are we doing this? You know, we were doing TikTok and we didn't have the bandwidth for it. We had a mobile app, which just like we didn't have, again, the resources to manage it in a meaningful way. We had an affiliate program that, although it was fantastic, it just wasn't like, it wasn't really lifting the overall sales of the store. And so we just like cut down to basically, we're going to run email, we're going to run SMS to complement the email, we're going to run heavy into Meta, and then we're going to use Google to sort of complement Facebook. So we just really, really simplified. So figuring out what channels we wanted to run them was a big one, as well as just like getting rid of SKUs and products that were meaningless to us. Not meaningless, but they just weren't really driving good enough revenue, because, you know, every product that's on a shelf, it's effectively costing us money. You know, there's cash tied up in this product, and going through the data and finding out like what are new customers buying, what are return customers buying, what is actually driving the needle here, and then just simplifying our product offerings as well. So then through doing that, you end up simplifying things, because people that are in seats have less responsibility to do, and they can focus on the things that they're really good at. And even just down to like simplifying our email strategy and just making them less pretty, so to speak, and just making them more like to the point, and like building them inside the actual builder versus, you know, making these crazy artboards. And there was just so many things that we went through. And then also just in the back end of things, you know, and this, a lot of credit goes to Rob on this one, is just really figuring out what metrics we need to be measuring every single day to actually see how the business is doing and getting real with it. He basically built this like master spreadsheet where we track every single metric of the business on a daily basis, like every single thing. And then we have certain columns in that tracker that are the most important to us, like, you know, like MER and new customer ROAS, and, you know, AOV is probably important on more of like a weekly basis, but we obsess over these data points, and that's all that drives the ship, is like we're not getting caught up in basically bullshit and just kind of working with the things that are actually gonna benefit us. So yeah, it wasn't one specific thing. It was just questioning everything, simplifying, cutting things, and then getting down to data that's actually makes sense for us.
Super cool. You also, Rob is really good at building in public So I've been following his journey for a while as a friend and in the biz here. And I know you also went through something in 2023, I believe, where, you know, the business made a big hire to bring in an expensive high-level person who I guess would be your boss, because you're very much like a homegrown talent in this biz. So can you talk a little, because I understand from talking with Rob and talking with you that there was a bit of a misstep with that hire. Can you talk a little bit about that process of having someone come in who is ostensibly supposed to be someone who knows a lot more than you, but then realizing as you go forward that, you know, like as you grew up into replace him eventually, you realizing that you actually do know what you're talking about and you didn't need his help?
It's a long story, but short form is just, you know, I was doing so many different things. I wear many hats in the marketing department. And so I was essentially drowning in tasks. And, you know, how can you hyper focus on anything when you're just simply putting out fires every day? You're trying to do a good job at everything. You can't really drive very deep on things. And so I kind of have more of an e-commerce background, a creative background, and I'm definitely less analytical. And so the goal was to bring in someone that would head out growth, and we would work kind of laterally together, and they would worry more about like the data-driven decisions. And then I would, you know, execute on those decisions basically. And so when bringing this hire in, it was like with all the best intentions to grow the brand. And, you know, we're like, we really need someone to come here and grow this thing. And, you know, shortly after it didn't take a very long time to realize that it was kind of a mistake. It kind of went pretty chaotic there for a while in Q2. Things got a bit out of control, and it just became a realization that like, being here for a long period of time and having a lot of context and understanding the brand was a superpower that people just can't possess in like a couple months. And that this person, you know, they weren't really what they were selling themselves to be. It was just a bit of a misstep in the hire, but with all the best intentions, like we all agreed on it. You know, we were like, let's bring someone in here that's done this before. They have a lot of experience at a high level. Like, this is going to be fantastic. I was like, actually at some level excited. And then, you know, within a couple months, they had kind of positioned themselves into a position that was above me. And then I was reporting to them and I was like, hey, I don't care if I'm the janitor. I want to grow this brand. Like, let's go. And then it just got real messy, and we eventually had to reformulate things. And now we've restructured it. So now that's my position, but then we've hired some help around me to, you know, basically just like help me out where I was drowning before. I've now delegated a lot of those tasks, but yeah, it was just a bit of a misstep, but at the same time, I also feel like it was so meaningful for us. We learned so many lessons in a very short period of time. Yeah. In hindsight, we were just like, what were we doing? Like it's like, as anyone would feel, but I often look back on it and just go, you know what? That was a super good learning. And I think it's actually set us up into a position for 2024 where I'm happy we're not going to make those mistakes anymore.
Very cool. So a big turnaround Q2 heading into Q3. We just survived and thrived in Q4. Talk to me a little bit about just how important getting that momentum was heading into that season. But what were the big wins in Q4 this year after you kind of righted the ship?
Yeah, I think the wins in Q4 was really just planning ahead of time, you know, more than we ever have. You know, usually Black Friday, it's such a big deal for us, all of Q4, from Halloween moving forward into, you know, holiday season, gifting, all that stuff. It's always driven so much of our business, but we've never really approached it in the way that we did last year, which was with a lot more thought, a lot more planning. We were having discussions as a marketing team in like August about, you know, Black Friday. We had a design system built. Like we had been through enough of them, and it was just one of those things where it's like, I don't want this to happen again. So it ran quite smoothly. And then also just being able to forecast like projections on how we thought it would do. So we were able to have like, you know, years and years of data, of Q4 data, to actually see like, okay, based off of the growth, like what are we expecting to see happen this year? If everything goes right, what happens if everything goes wrong? And then also what happens if everything goes like exceptionally well and it beats our expectations? So it was kind of cool to actually map out the potential revenue and then actually hit those goals, which was really cool. So I think also too, just like having the right people in the right seats was really important. I think there's been other years where we're running around with our heads cut off a little bit. And then this year it really felt like the right people were in the right places to do that one particular job. And it all just came together and it worked really well. So yeah, it was growth over last year, which is all we can really ask for, is just, we grew from last year. So
amazing. Did you find you had to do more then to get those results. I think that's something I'm hearing from a lot of people, whether it's sending more emails, whether it's more ad spend. In order to beat last year, you had to do more. Were you finding that?
Yeah. I actually did find that. So we spent a lot more than last year in general. Like we spent a lot more on Meta. We spent around the same in Google. Google, we have actually a pretty talented agency that was able to spend a lot more effectively. So we essentially spend around the same amount of money, but with just way better results. And we spent a lot more on Meta, went way like a lot more aggressive, but it wasn't proportional. So we did have to spend a lot more, but the results wasn't like, you know, if we spent almost double last year, we didn't double our results. It was like, you know, maybe up by 50 or 60%. So you definitely had to spend a bit more this year to get, you know, not proportional results. So I did notice that. We also switched email providers as well, like during like right, I want to say like right at the end of Q3. So it was very close to Black Friday. And so there was a lot of stuff around there where we're working with a new platform and there was certain things that, you know, we weren't able to segment and, you know, certain time zones we weren't able to send in when we were that we were able to do with the other platform. And so, you know, I think that there was maybe some performance issues with email in that sense, but for the most part, like everything went really well. And, but I do agree. I noticed that there was like almost everything fell flat. Like it wasn't like exponentially bigger than last year. We had to work a little bit harder for a bit better result. So
what platform were you on and what did you switch to? I'm just curious.
We were on Klaviyo for a while and we switched to Sendlane. That was one of our things when we were simplifying. We were paying a lot of money to be on Klaviyo. I don't feel like we were using it to its like full extent. We kind of, after discussions of like how we're going to run email, we were like, this is, you know, this doesn't need to be so overcomplicated. Sendlane not only was like a better price point for us, but it also felt like they actually wanted like a partnership where they wanted to work with us. Where Klaviyo, you kind of sign up and, you know, if you message their support chat, like they'll kind of help you out, but you're more of like on your own when you use Klaviyo, where I felt like with Sendlane, it was more, I have a Slack chat, like a Slack channel open up with them and I can ask them any questions. They're like always helping us out. Jimmy's super good. He always gets on the chat and helps me out. Doesn't matter what time of day it is. So we often take swings on people and like we've taken a swing on Sendlane and so far it's been fantastic. You know, it's no secret, like Klaviyo did have a lot more in-depth things that you can do. Like they're just been in the game for longer, but Sendlane has like been great so far. So I've been really happy with that.
It's just that cycle of SaaS too, right? Like as you become these big companies become prisoners of their own success, right? Where they grow so big and yeah. Then someone comes along to say, okay, well I can, you know, give you more attention or I can give you more of what you need and less of what you don't. And yeah. You see it across things like Yotpo and all sorts of these big incumbents that have trouble retaining sometimes when these upstarts come in the market.
Yeah. And the pricing was crazy with Klaviyo and like, we can justify it because we can actually measure revenue on email. And it was obviously, you know, 100x of what we were actually spending every month. Like it was crazy. But when you add up all the fees that you're paying every month and you're going through that exercise of trying to cut expenses and, you know, you have the ability to cut $15,000 of cost out of your business and, you know, $15,000 or $2,000 of that is coming from Klaviyo. Like that's meaningful. Like that's a part-time hire or like, you know, and some sort of external hire like that. We like really think about every single dollar that's coming in and out of the business. So we don't just overlook that. And so price was a main driver of it, but it was also nice to know that we were going to a platform that was really working on nerding out on email and that wanted to actually work with us. It feels like we have partners versus like just using a platform and paying a fee.
Very cool. You mentioned your big gains in efficiency in Google, which I think is great because it's like that bottom of funnel, you really can get ruthless with efficiency there. Mentioned having to be a bit less efficient maybe on Meta to get the same results, spending more. Then looking at 2024, I know you guys have set your sights on Amazon. Can you talk a little bit about why you feel like Amazon is the right, is one of the ways you want to grow in 2024?
Yeah, I think it's, we've been putting it off for many years now. I think we've talked about it years ago and now it's becoming like very obvious that we need to be on there. Amazon is also changing like in real time. I mean, it's gone from this place that you've, you know, ordered, you know, phone cases from to now people are shopping on it like they're a grocery store. They're buying toilet paper. They're expanding their monthly purchases so much on Amazon. It's becoming almost like a department store. And socks is a huge category on Amazon. You know, when you look up socks on Amazon, it's very obvious that there's a lot of volume going through there. We are already like showing up in search. Like if you search our name, like socks come up. So it's like, why aren't we there if people are searching for Outway socks? And typically how people buy socks is they buy them in bulk. Like, you know, we've been conditioned to sort of buy socks almost like the same way people buy a toothbrush. They go to like the store and then they just like pick up a pack and they don't think a lot about it. There's very few people actually put a lot of thought into the socks they get. They're just like, oh, I like ankle and like those ones are white and they're I get a 10 pack for a good deal and they put them in their cart. Where I think that behavior still exists. Not everyone's going onto a Shopify store to buy like a custom designed sock that's specific for road cycling or anything like that. So we want to capture that type of behavior where if someone just wants simply like white socks that are in bulk, we figure it's probably a good play for us to be on Amazon, not to offer every single product that we offer in our store, but offer the things that are more Amazon friendly. Like I was saying, like 12 packs, 10 packs in more of our flagship ankles and crew heights and even like knee high compression. So I think there's a very quick 7-figure business just in that channel itself for us, like almost immediately, just because people are already there. So we're just going to be harvesting demand that's already exists.
Super cool. How far are you along in that process?
We're at the very, very beginning. That's basically a discussion that we're having probably this month or early next month. I think we're probably going to go for like a Q3 rollout of Amazon. So
very cool. One of the things I'm hearing from brands, Q4 challenging. It's great that you beat last year. I think that's probably not the story you hear most. You know, it's the story I heard from a lot of brands at Pilot House, but I think when you're out there on D2C Twitter, there's the sense that it was rough for people a little bit. How is 2024 looking? Because I hear different things. You hear anecdotes all the time about people saying, oh, people even during the holiday period, Q5, I guess is what we're in now, they were seeing really, really great results, even I guess because shipping times are so much less than what you need to buy on Black Friday. So you can still buy much closer to the holidays. How is the new year, new you Q5 looking right now? I know we're only 5 days in.
Yeah, I'm feeling pretty optimistic. We're obviously dealing with like most businesses are probably dealing with some refunds off the back of Q4. So that, you know, lowers your daily revenue and you go in and you're like, I swear to God, that was higher and it went down. But so far, everything's looking good. I thought there would have been a lot more of a lull like in the first week of the year, just because we obviously hammered our audience pretty hard during Q4. There's a lot of fatigue in our list, but Facebook is performing really well. Like platform ROAS is really good. NC ROAS is so far so good. I mean, it's too early to really tell, because I have seen stuff on Twitter where people are like, man, January is doing awesome. And it's like, well, check in next Wednesday, because these are the same people that will like post next week and be like, oh my God, like we're in trouble. We're in trouble. So I think it's too early to tell right now. I think I'll probably make my decision near the end of January to see where it pans out. But it's definitely not... it's not as low as I thought it would be, which is good. So I'm very optimistic about this year. I'm not like an economist or anything like that, but I just, I feel it in my bones. This is a big year for Outway. I think it's a good year for D2C, for brands that are battle tested through the hard times. I think a lot of people talk about things going well, but there's a lot of people on Twitter that aren't talking about how bad things are going. So I think there are a lot of brands that are just quietly dying and they're going away or they're just disappearing off Twitter. And so I think this year is going to be that year where all of the brands that have, you know, gone through all of these trials and tribulations are going to come out ahead and they're going to capture more market, regardless whether it grows or not. Even if it's flat, they're just going to get more piece of the pie that they've been fighting over.
Yeah, I think, the trend of people buying things online is only increasing. So it's I just feel grateful to be in an industry that's rapidly growing, even amid areas where there might be degrowth. I'm curious, you know, I was at the grocery store the other day and everything's about twice as expensive as it was. Is inflation something that's hit you guys? Have you had to, like, over this year of inflation, have you done anything with your prices? Have you raised your prices at all?
No, we haven't. We went the other way. So like I'm, in my opinion, it's not really like up to me. This is a Rob decision for sure of like deciding the pricing on things. Although, you know, we talk about it and I can influence that. I'm very much like, I want the prices to stay the same. Like, you know, who wouldn't, right? Because it sucks when you have to increase your prices. And then it's like, now you're charging $25 for a pair of socks. And it's like, no one wants that. Like, you want to try to get the best price. So Rob worked with the ops team and they basically went the other way, which is they tried to lower the overall COGS, like lower the expenses so that, you know, we were getting cheaper pricing on our end so that we could just pass on not the savings, but the non-inflation to the customer, which has been nice. So we haven't done a price increase in quite a while. And when we did our price increase, it had nothing to do with inflation. It had everything to do with the fact that we had had the same prices for years. And we were just like, the cost of business is just generally rising and we need to be pricing these a little bit higher. And we were also like, we were so far from our competitors at the time that it almost gave a feeling of like, are these worse? Because you can almost screw yourself over a little bit where if you're priced competitively too low, then people might look at the other competitor and be like, oh, these just must be better. And some people really just want better socks. So we try to be like just under our competition.
I have so many pairs of your socks, which I love. The merino wool ones are my favorite. But yeah, you also have so many crazy designs. And I've even just going on the site, like some of the new minimalist designs that you guys have, you know, the happy faces and things like that. And I also know that your white ankle socks are the like by far your biggest sellers. So like the ones that don't have any personality or they were in the past. Talk to me a little bit about product design and like what you guys learned over 2023 around the products themselves.
Yeah, I'd say as far as design goes, the one learning I would say personally is that you just don't know what design's going to hit well. We really do think deeply about like what designs we think are going to do well based off of, you know, hey, last month these ones did really well. Let's like iterate around this design and stuff. And then sometimes we'll have designs where they're almost on the chopping block and they don't get approved, and then they end up being our best seller. So it is really hard to identify like what socks will hit. And sometimes like we have a few pairs where, you know, if you put a gun to my head, I would have been like, don't run this sock. Like this is not going to do well. And then it's like been a bestseller for 6+ months. So you kind of have to be willing to be wrong and you just have to be super curious. And then also like there's kind of a difference in our audience where like we've had the ability to have pop-up stores and work events. Like we used to have a store here in Victoria. We just did a pop-up recently. We've had events in the past where we've gone to like marathons and, you know, bike races. And so you get to actually talk to customers, and that's actually like a game changer because you can just ask them questions and be like, why did you buy these socks? Like, what do you like about those? And you can see in real time the behaviors of how people buy. And there almost like is this line in the sand between people that like the funky socks and then the people that are just like, no, I don't care about designs. I just want comfort. And so in the grand scheme of things, if you, you know, walk around in public, most people wear plain socks and you can't really ignore that. You can't make someone want to put a giraffe on their sock, but they do exist. And so, yeah, things like flagships, like our white ankles and like even just our white, you know, flagship crew, they do fantastic because even myself, like before I got involved with Outway, I just wore like basic white socks and now I'm wearing like crazy socks every day. So I've been kind of like brought into it, but I definitely understand why people just want the plain ones. And so we try to like mix it up and make sure that we have designs for the people that are trying to add flair and express themselves. And then we have the basics that perform the same as the rest of them, but they can just like, you know, be added to your everyday outfit.
Creative fuel, so much growth on Meta. I'm curious, like with your white socks being these heavy hitters, are they also the heavy hitters in ads? Like,
no.
Do you feature white socks in the ads or do you feature the flashy socks and then people, they get their eyes get caught by the flashy socks and then they come in for the staples?
Yeah, that's basically how it goes. Most of the time, like I very rarely have advertisements with plain socks because they're not really scroll stopping. You're doing a lot of like, yeah, it's just such an unsexy product. Like when you're trying to, you know, promote it on the newsfeed, especially when you see other ads in the wild, we typically use our best-selling designs as sort of like the bait of being like, hey, check out these really cool designs. They are eye-catching because also too, people that wear plain socks, they'll typically like, they'll buy most plain socks, but then they might dabble with like one design that they like, or they'll buy it for a loved one. But regardless whether they will wear them or not, they'll typically see them and go, oh, that's really nice. Like, I really like that design. So then they end up clicking through, they read about the socks, they go on the product page. And then next thing you know, they're like, oh, cool. They have flagship white. Like they've got plain socks for me. And then I'm going to grab some for, you know, my husband or, you know, my kids. So yeah, it's, we typically use the better designs for our advertisements.
Makes sense. You mentioned that your background is e-commerce, and I know that you, as a VP marketing, have a background in the actual e-commerce, in the actual like technology of the website. Talk a little bit about how you've evolved the website over this year and into what your goals are in 2024 with it.
Yeah, I have like, so my background is like web developing and like programming. I'm not like gifted at all in programming. I consider myself a decent web developer. So like my, I definitely have the technical chops to sort of think of an idea, think of it from a market angle, and then actually build the thing, which has been really cool for us. I have a helper as well that if anything's too technical or like I don't have the time to do it, I definitely delegate those things out. But like all of the website and the merchandising and stuff is basically done through me. Rob works with me a lot to, you know, make sure that like we're bouncing ideas off each other constantly. But I basically do, at night is when I do most of the, any sort of coding or custom components. But like, yeah, the website is something that's super, super important for us, at least. It's just, we keep it as simple as we can because we don't have a ton of time to like add tons of things to the website. We just, our goal for the website is that like when a new customer comes to the site, is it very clear what we do, what we offer, and can they get to the checkout like very quickly and understand the purchase? Like it's just friction-free is the goal for us. And then when returning customers come to the website, can they navigate through the new releases and just get on their way? So the website's been like a huge part of my role, and I've learned so much throughout the years. I've, you know, gone from like making, barely knowing any code to just like all of a sudden making all custom components and attaching them to our third party theme. And so it's been really cool to like nerd out on that part of it as well, because we can kind of just, you know, formulate some sort of idea that might get us better conversion rate, and we can actually implement it within the week. So if that answers your question.
Yeah. And then the other piece I think is just that is the ease of use from your side, because when you guys are launching however many designs you plan to launch this year, that ability to like launch new SKUs is, and so you describe what you did in order to make it easier to launch new SKUs.
Yeah. So, if anyone's familiar with Shopify, like Shopify will have a product template in the back end, and you essentially, you build out your product page with this template. When you add products to the back end, you attach the template to these products, and then it displays in your store. And things like price and title and description are all dynamic features of that. So that when you change products, it changes the price, it changes the title. But what a lot of people aren't really utilizing, and I think people are starting to get into it now just because there's not a lot of support with it, is using meta fields and meta objects. So essentially, like meta fields are pieces of data that you can attach to things in your Shopify store. You can attach them to multiple things, not just products, but like collections and variants and different things. But for this case, like products, you could attach any sort of data point you want to your product itself. If you scroll all the way down the page in your on your product backend, you will see like a spot that says meta fields. And so what I started to do is just, we had like 20 different product templates on our website that ran all of the different types of things that we had. You know, some socks are knit and some socks are hiking socks, and they're different heights and they're different designs. And every single type of sock would require its own product template to basically run that, because they would have different technical features, they'd have different materials and cares, and it was really inefficient. So we had, yeah, I think it was 18 to 20 product templates. And so my goal was, how do I make this run off one product template? So I did a ton of data entry. And so every single one of our socks on our site has pieces of data that are attached to it that coincide with that product itself. And then I've used Liquid to pull it into the template so that every single time you switch the product page, it's just dynamically pulling all of that meta field data and populating the page so that it almost looks like custom to that product. So in theory, you would think that we had like 200 product templates, when actually we have one that's just running like, I think like I have a tech banner, for example, below our product, it'll have a picture of our product. It'll call out like six technical features with the title. It'll have a background image. There's a color on top of the background image. All of that is being dynamically pulled in by like 117 lines of code, basically. That's just speaking to the meta field data, and it's populating all of the necessary things to make it custom like that. So it's one of those things that's much easier to show than it is to tell, but that was a technical project that I took on last year that it allowed me to learn a lot more about Shopify and meta fields and the power of them. But then also it benefited us like on conversion rate, and it just benefited us on having more clarity on the product pages. So when people go onto one SKU, they aren't seeing a bland universal page. They're seeing something that actually looks like it's been curated towards that product, which increases the likelihood that they'll feel more connected and buy it. So
that's awesome. No, I think you told it very well, by the way. I had a really interesting conversation with a sponsor who's coming on the pod yesterday, and they made the pitch that Facebook and Meta ads aren't really top of funnel, because they're actually more middle or bottom of funnel, and that true top of funnel exercises are things like, you know, television or podcasts or these other things where you're really becoming more just aware of the brand story. Facebook is Meta, like for a company like yours, there's no doubt about it. It is top of funnel as well, but it also like compresses the funnel. It basically compresses it into like buy now. I'm curious, have you experimented or have you done much in what this sponsor would call like true top of funnel, like that would sit on top of Facebook?
I mean, we've talked about doing TV, like that's been a conversation before. I think it would do really well for our brand. Again, like it's hard to get attribution on that. I know attribution's getting a little bit better for it. And it also just, and now you have a lot more choice of like what TV you're in. You know, I wouldn't want to go on standard cable TV. I'd probably want to be on more like streaming services and things like that. I personally think Meta is top of funnel for us just because it's all context too, because like we have a product that's very much like an impulse buy. It's not a very high cart. You know, we're like an $85 AOV on a normal day. It sometimes can go into three figures. So it's one of those products that doesn't really require nearly as much brand awareness. People know what socks are typically. That's why a lot of our ads just run right to the collection or run right to PDP pages. There's not a lot of educating you need to do around like, hey, like, have you ever heard of socks? Like it's pretty well understood. We're just trying to let them know that our socks are above average. And so for us personally, I think Meta's top of funnel, but I do hear what you're saying. And I also wouldn't probably do brand awareness or any sort of those true top of funnel awareness campaigns in Meta either. I pretty much go right for like objective for sales. But it's something we've talked about. I think it would be really cool. But again, that's it. It would be cool. And sometimes what is cool is not always what actually gets results.
100%. I have a good friend of mine, James. He has a friend in Australia that's an underwear brand that just absolutely slayed TV and actually local TV, like actually went to a TV station and like called up a TV station, was like, hey, I want to buy a remnant inventory, blah, blah, blah. They actually slayed with it. They had a very unique prop. It was one of some of them ball separating underwear that was so popular. So they had that like unique factor that was like that people weren't thinking about maybe previously on TV. But in that case, it worked really well. But I think you make a great point when this would be doing what you were doing again, maybe in Q1 and Q2 of last year, of sort of like potentially complicating things.
A
bike that ain't broke. It sounds like so you don't need to fix it.
It also too like depends on like where you are at your growth. I mean, I think channel expansion is something that we all want to do, but channel expansion is like a byproduct of hitting ceilings in the channels you're in. I think we have a long ways to go on Meta. I think we have huge scale that we can reach with Meta. We haven't even come close to spending what we want and you know, generating what we want with Meta. I think it's, you know, if you're talking about a brand that's doing like, you know, 9-10 figures a year, then of course, like channel expansion into TV is a conversation you should have. It's probably one you've already had. But, you know, at our size right now and just like where we are in our growth, I just think like we could probably get to our goals with literally a Meta account and a Google account, strong email and a strong website that is just like removing friction from customers, and then just a good social media presence. Like that's all you really need.
And Amazon this year, you say that's gonna be another Amazon. 7-figure addition. Don't forget.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Amazon. Amazon makes the most sense, even though like we're trying not to complicate things. I think Amazon is actually a complication that we're willing to try, you know?
Yeah. It's pretty established now. It's not going anywhere.
Yeah.
I'm curious, what's a part of your tech stack that you couldn't live without? What's a SaaS tool that you just absolutely love?
Oh man, that is a good question. I actually don't really have much of an answer for that. If I think of what we got, it's so simplified. Like I really, really mean that. It's so simplified. I was even thinking like our upsell was fantastic, but we built one native to the store, so we don't have that. Like that's the kind of stuff we did, is like even when we had apps that we were paying like 40, 50 bucks a month for, we were like, we could build this. So we would just build it. So if you-
So you're the answer. Taylor is the SaaS tool that you can't live without,
Taylor's
sounds like.
Yeah, Taylor's the tech stack, I guess. No, yeah, there's nothing that really stands out to me that's like, oh, we have this in our tech stack and it's like, we couldn't do anything without it. There's the obvious ones, but if you were to go through our apps in our store, I think a lot of people would be fairly surprised how clear and simple it is. Like there's not a lot of complications in there, so.
Nice, it's a good answer. Yeah. Then the other standard question we love to ask is, if we were to give you $50,000, and it's, you know, not, that's probably a drop in the bucket to your marketing budget. But if we said, okay, you got to use this in Q1, $50,000, how would you deploy that right now? Would it go into your current funnels, or would you do something different?
It wouldn't go into our current funnels because we have the money for whatever budget we can in the current funnels. I would say if I was to take a $50,000 swing, something that I've really wanted to do is just see what that looks like giving it to a creator. I would love to go onto YouTube and either find, you know, three creators or one really strong creator, people that are in the running community or the cycling community that have like a strong presence, a really good channel, getting some sort of partnership going with them where they started to talk about our product. I think it's something that I've always wanted to do. And like, I've seen other brands attach themselves to YouTubers that I watch, and I'm like, oh, that would be really cool. So that would be a swing that I'd want to take, is get involved in some sort of high-end influencer.
I love that. Rob's got quite a personality. He's good at generating controversy on some of his social posts. So yeah. I always think of the shiny opportunity of TikTok. I just love TikTok personally. Yeah. The brands that are able to like go into their storeroom and like make content that people love to watch. Yeah. I just feel like there's an opportunity for something like that. I think you could turn Rob loose in the sock storeroom. You could do like sock puppets. Like there's something there. Are you doing anything on TikTok or TikTok shops these days?
Yeah, I mean, TikTok was one of those things that we cut. I agree with you. I'm like a bit of a sucker for TikTok. I learn a lot of stuff off TikTok. I think other brands, I love to see what other brands are doing on there. There's a couple brands that I've known that have, you know, exclusively grown on TikTok, like organically. And it's sometimes a bit scary because then, you know, if you're one like ban away from losing your entire business, but I do think that there's more that we could be doing on TikTok. I think that's, again, just a matter of resources and finding someone. We used to have an intern that ran our entire TikTok account, and he got a few videos viral, but those viral videos never really translated to sales. And often those viral videos have nothing to do with your brand or your product, and everything to do with just, oh, in the moment, oh, that was funny, or like that caused a controversy in the comments. So I haven't seen the evidence that it actually translates to sales with socks. I don't know if that's just the way that it went for us or if there's a different approach we need to take, but it definitely does bug me sometimes when I'm like, oh, I wish we could do this like really crazy TikTok page that built content. But again, I don't know if that would just be something that's cool or if that would be something that actually drives meaningful traffic.
100%. I'm going to shout this out in the intro, but we actually have at D2C, if you want to figure out how good these Outway socks are, all you got to do, A, go to Outway and just buy some socks, or you can leave me a review. Leave this podcast, D2C podcast, on your chosen podcast player, a review, 5 stars, got to be 5 stars. And then email me at eric@directtoconsumer.co and I will hand deliver you a pair of D2C Outway socks. You got to try them. They're excellent. Did you get a pair of D2C socks? I don't think you got one.
Oh, I probably have somewhere in my drawer. I've got literally hundreds and hundreds of pairs of socks. I am very minimalist, but the one thing that I find I can't let go is I have garbage bags of old socks. Like I almost keep them like Pokemon cards, hoping one day they're worth a lot of money. Like I have the OG ones from 5 years ago all the way up until now. So my sock drawer is a bit of a mess right now with just everything. Like every day I'm just like randomly selecting pairs and putting them on. So I bet you I have D2C pairs in there.
Very cool. Well, thanks for coming on today. I think we're going to have to schedule something out. I want to do more in person. One of my goals in 2024 is to do more in person stuff. You guys are in town here. A, you, me, and Rob are going to start playing some tennis soon, which I'm excited about.
Yeah.
And B, just some roundtable type things where we get people in person, maybe mixing it up in the Pilot House studio, making some more content. So I assume you'll be up for that.
Yeah. I mean, right now as we film, we're probably like 5 minutes away from each other. So
yeah,
there's no reason not to sit at the table. So that would be fantastic.
Nice. Well, thanks for coming on the D2C podcast today, Taylor. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much for listening to today's episode. If you're not a subscriber to our newsletter, you can do that right now at directtoconsumer.co. I'm Eric Dick, and this has been the D2C podcast. We'll see you next time.